Varney the Vampire or The Feast of Blood. Chapter 8, The Coffin, The Absence of the Dead, The Mysterious Circumstance, and Consideration of George. As they were all silent for a few moments, and they looked around them with mutual feelings of curiosity. Two of that party had, of course, never been in the vault at all. Brothers alone, they were descended into it upon an occasion nearly a year before of their father being placed in it, still looked upon it with almost as curious eyes as they who now had their first sight of it. For man had been all of the thoughtful, imaginative cast of mind, some curious sensations for sure come over him upon standing such a place where he knows, round in lie in calmness of death, those in whose veins have flowed kindred blood to him, who bore the same name and preceded him, the drive drama of his existence, influencing his destiny, his position in life, probably largely by their actions, compounded by their virtues and their vices. Henry Bannerworth and his brother George were just the kind of persons to feel strongly such sensations. Both were reflective, imaginative, educated young men. As the light from the wax candle flashed upon their faces, it was evident how deeply they felt the situation in which they were placed. Mr. Chenoweth and Marchdale were silent. They both knew what was passing in the minds of the brothers. They had too much delicacy to interrupt a train of thought which, although from having no affinity for the dead who lay around, they could not share in, yet they reflected. Henry at length, with a sudden start, seemed to recover himself from his reverie. "This is a time for action, George," he said, "not for romantic thought. Let us proceed." "Yes, yes," said George. He advanced a step towards the centre of the vault. "Can you find out among all these coffins, for there seem to be nearly 20, said Mr. Chenoweth, "which is the one we seek?" "I think we may," replied Henry. "Some of the early coffins of our race, I know, were made of marble, others of metal, both of which materials I expect would withstand the approaches of time for 100 years at least." "Let us examine," said George. There were shelves and niches built into the walls all round, which the coffins were placed, so they could not be much difficulty in a minute. Many examination of them all, one after the other. When, however, they came to look, they found the case of offensive fingers had been more busy than they could have imagined. Whatever they touched of the early coffins crumbled into dust before their very fingers. In some cases, inscriptions were quite illegible. In others, the plates that bore them have fallen onto the floor of the vault, so it's impossible to say which coffin they belonged. Of course, the most recent and fresh-looking coffins they did not examine, because they could not have anything to do with the object of the melancholy visits. "We shall arrive at no conclusion," said George. "All seems to be rotted away among those coffins where we might expect to find one belonging to Martha Duke Bannerworth, our ancestor. Here is a coffin placed in Marchdale. Taking one from the floor, he handed it to Mr. Chenoweth, who, upon inspection of it, close to the light, exclaimed, "It must have belonged to the coffin you seek. What does it say? What says it? 'Ye mortal remains of Martha Duke Bannerworth, yeoman, God rest thee solely, A.D. 1440. "It is the plate belonging to his coffin," said Henry. "Now a search is fruitless." "If it is so indeed," exclaimed George, "for how can we tell which of the coffins have lost their plates this one really belongs?" It should not be so hopeless, said Marchdale. "I have from time to time, in pursuit of the crowning law, which I had once found of, entered many vaults, and I have always observed that in the coffin of metal was sound and good, while the outer one of wood had run away, yielded at once a touch of the violet sand that was laid upon it. But omitting that to be the case, said Henry. How does that assist us in the location of a coffin? I have always in my experience found the name and rank of the deceased engraved upon the lid of the inner coffin, as well as being set upon in such a more prayerful manner on the plate which is secured to the outer one. He writes, said Mr. Chinworth. I wonder we never thought of that. If our ancestors were buried in a leaden coffin, there would be no difficulty in finding which it is. Harry sees the light proceeding to one of the coffins which seemed to be in massive decay. He pulled away some of the rotten wood work, and his son exclaimed, you're quite right. Here is a strong leaden coffin within, which, though quite black, does not otherwise appear to have suffered. What a description on that, said George. Definitely the name and the lid was deciphered, but it was found not to be the coffin of him whom they sought. We can make short work of this, said Marchand Dale, by only examining those leaden coffins which have lost their plates from off their outer cases. There do not appear to be many in such a state. He then, with another light, which he lighted from one of the Henry now carried, commenced assisting in the search, which was carried on silently for more than 10 minutes. Suddenly Mr. Marchdale cried in a tone of excitement, I have found it here. They immediately surrounded the spot where he was. They pointed, and then he pointed to the little coffin, which he had been rubbing with his handkerchief. In order to make the scripture more legible, it said, see, it is here by the combined light of candles. He saw the words, Marvel Joe Burnhamworth, Youngman, 1640. Yes, there can be no mistake here, said Henry. This is the coffin, and it shall be opened. I have an iron crowbar here, said Marchdale. It is an old friend of mine. I'm accustomed to the use of it. Shall I open the coffin? Do so, said Henry. He stood around in silence, and Mr. Marchdale, with such care, proceeded to open the coffin, which seemed of great thickness and was of solid lead. It probably the partial rotting of the metal, in consequence of the damps of that place, and made it easier to open the coffin than it otherwise would have been. But certain it was that the top came away remarkably easily, indeed so easily did it come off. Then another superstition might have been hazarded, namely, it had never been at all been effectually fastened. A few moments had elapsed were ones of many very great suspense of everyone over there present. It would indeed be quite sure to assert all the world was for the time forgotten in absorbing interests which appertained the fair which was in progress. Candles of both now both held by Mr. Chinworth, and they were also held to the casket at full and clear light upon the coffin. Now the lid slid off, and Henry eagerly glazed into the interior. There lay something certainly there. An orbital, thank God, exclaimed his lips. Body's there, exclaimed George. All right, said Marchdale. Here it is. There is something. What can it be? Hold a light, said Mr. Chinworth. Hold a light, some of you. Let it be quite certain. George took the lights. Mr. Chinworth, without any hesitation, did his hand at once in the coffin and took up some fragments of rags which were there. They were so rotten they fell to pieces. His grasp, like so many pieces of tinder. There was a death-like pause for some few moments. Then Mr. Chinworth said in a low voice, there is not the least vestige of a dead body here. Henry gave a deep groan as he said, Mr. Chinworth, can you take upon yourself to say that no corpse has undergone a process of decomposition in his coffin? Will answer your question exactly, probably, in your hurry. You have avoided it? Said Mr. Chinworth, I cannot take upon myself to say a thing, but this I can say namely, in his coffin there are no ornamental remains. It's quite impossible that any corpse enclosed here could, in any lapse of time, have so utterly and entirely disappeared. I am answered, said Henry. Good God, exclaimed George. But it's but another damning proof to those we already have on our minds of one as dreadful suspicions that ever a man, mind of man, conceived. What would seem, it would seem so, said Markdale terribly. Oh, I want that, what, that I were dead. This terrible good of heaven, why are those things? Oh, if they were but dead and so spared the torture, supposing such things possible. Think again, Mr. Chillingworth. I pray you think again, cried Mr. Stell. If you were to think for the remainder of my existence, cried, I could come to one another conclusion. It does not matter of opinion. It's a matter of fact. You are positive then, said Henry. A dead body much Darwin Duke Bannerworth is not rested here. I am positive. Look for yourselves. Lead is but slightly discoloured. It looks totally clean and fresh. It's not a vestige of purification. A bones, a dust even. They did all look for themselves. And a most casual glance was sufficient to satisfy the most sceptical. All is over, said Henry. Let us now leave the place. All I can ask of you, my friends, is lock this dreadful secret deep into your hearts. It should never pass my lips, Marchdale, nor mine. You may depend, said the doctor. I was much in hopes that this night's work would have had the effect of dissipating instead of adding to the gloomy fancies now possess you. Good heavens, cried George. Can you call them fancies, Mr. Chillingworth? I do indeed. Have you not yet a doubt? My good young friend, I told you, for the first, I would not believe in any of your vampire. I tell you now, if one were to come, lay hold of me by the throat as long as I could, at all grasp of breath, I should tell him that he was a dead impostor. This is carrying credibility to the verge of absurdity. Far beyond it, if you please. You will not be convinced, said Marchdale. I most certainly on this point will not. Then you are one who would doubt a miracle if you saw it with your own eyes. I would, because I do not believe in miracles. I should endeavour to find some rational and scientific means of accounting for the phenomenon. But that's the very reason why we have no miracles nowadays. Between you and I, no prophets or saints, all that sort of thing. I would rather avoid such observations, such a place as this, said Marchdale. Nay, do not be in a moral coward, cried Mr. Chillingworth, to make your opinions of expression on them depend upon any certain locality. I know not what to think, said Henry. I am bewildered quite. Let us know. Come away. Mr. Marchdale replaced the lid of the coffin, and then the little party moved towards the staircase. Henry turned before he descended and glanced back into the vault. Oh, he said, if I could but think where there had been some mistake, some error of judgment on which mind could rest for hope. I deeply regret, said Marchdale, so strangely devised this expedition. I did hope that from it would have resulted so much good. I knew I have every reason to do so, said Dinworth. Advise it likewise, and I tell you, if its result perfectly, astonishingly, though I will not allow myself to brace at once all conclusions which it would seem to lead me. I am satisfied, said Henry. And now you both advise me for the best. Curse of the heaven seems now to have fallen upon me. My house of nonsense, cried Sir Chillingworth. What for? Alas, I know not. Then you may depend that heaven would not act so oddly in the first place. Heaven doesn't curse anyone. And second, it is too just and plain, but pain is not amply deserved. Ascending to the gloomy staircase of the vaults, the countenances of both George and Henry were very much saddened. It's quite evident that their faults were by far too busy to enable them to enter into any conversation. They did, and particularly George, seemed to hear all that was said to them. Their intellects seemed almost stunned by the unexpected circumstances of the disappearance of the body of their ancestor. All along they had, although most unknown to themselves, felt a kind of conviction They must find some remains of Marmaduke Fenworth, which would render the superstition, even the most superstitious minds, he was a vampire, thing totally physically impossible. But now the whole question assumed a far more bewildering shape. A body was not in its coffin. It is not where quietly slept the long sleep of death common unto humanity. Where was it then? What had it become of it? Where, how, and under what circumstances had it been removed? Had it still burst the bands and been held it? Hideously stalked forth into the world again to make one of the seeming inhabitants, kept up for the 100 years of dreadful existence, and such adventures as they had consummated, at the whole where of the course of all human life it once lived. All these were questions which resistibly pressed themselves upon the consideration Henry's brother. They are awful questions. And yet take when he served a sane, thinking, a brave man to show him all they had been, as they seen, subjected to all which had been subjected, and save human reason, all the arguments that his brain could back it with, would be able to hold out against such a vast combination of horrible evidences, this, and say, I don't, can't believe it. True enough was only plain. Mr. Chillingworth was the only man he would not argue the question. He said at once, I do not believe this thing upon this point. I will yield to no evidence whatsoever. That was the only way to dispose of such a question. But there were not many who would do dispose of it, and not one so much interested in it as were the brothers Burdenworth, who could at all hope to get into such a state of mind. Balls are laid carefully bound again. The screws are placed, and he found himself unequal to the task. It was done by Marchdale, who took planes to replace everything in the same state in which they had found it. Even the mat in the bottom pew, they had exhausted the light. Their heavy hearts, they all walked towards the window to leave the sacred sacrifice. By many means they had entered that there. They had entered it. Shall we face the pane of glasses, Marchdale? No. Matters not, said Henry. Literally, nothing matters now. I care not what becomes of me. I am growing weary of a life which now must be one of misery and of dread. You must not allow me to fall in such a state of mind as this, said the doctor. We have become a patient of mine very quickly. I cannot help it. Well, but be a man. If there is a serious evil affecting you, fight out against them the best way you can. I cannot. Come now, listen to me. We need not, I think, trouble ourselves by the plain glass so long. Come along. Took the arm of Henry, walked on with him. A little advance to the others, Henry said, the best way you can may depend on beating evils, be they great or small, is to get an obstinate feeling of defiance against them. Now, when everything occurs which is uncomfortable to me, I endeavour to convince myself. I have no great difficulty in doing so. I am a seriously injured man, indeed. Yes, I then get very angry and gets up to kind of obstinacy, which makes me not feel half so much mental misery as would be my potion. But if I were to succumb to the do evil, commence whining over it. It is many people do under that presence of being resigned, but this family affliction of mine transcends anything that anybody does, that anybody else ever endured. I don't know what, didn't know that. There is a view of the subject which, if I were you, would you only make me more obsolete. What can I do? In the first place, I like to say to myself, there may or there may not be supernatural beings who, with some physical disarrangement, only nature things, make themselves obnoxious to living people. If they are, there may be vampires. If they are, defy them. Let their imagination paint its very terrors. Let fear do what it will and what it can in people in the mind which horrors. shrink with nothing, even if when I could defy them all. It's not like defying heaven. Most certainly not, for in all we say and all we do, we act from the impulses of that mind, which is given to us by heaven itself. Heaven creates an intellect, a mind of certain order. Heaven will not quarrel. It does that work which it was adapted to do. I know these are your opinions. I've heard you mention them before. They are the opinions of every rational person, any man worth, because they stand the test of reason. And what I urge upon you is not to allow yourself to be mentally prostrated. Even the vampires paid a visit to your house. If I am, say I fight him. Self-liberation is a great law of nature, implies it in all our hearts. Do you summon it to your aid? I will endeavour to think as you would of me. I thought more than once of summoning religion my aid. Well, that is religion indeed. Consider so, and most rational religion of all. All we read about religion does not seem expressly to agree with it. You may consider it as an energy, as a jury. But Mr. Chillingworth, I cannot and will not be renounced the sublime truths of Scripture. You may be incorrigible, they may be inconsistent, and some of them may look ridiculous. They still, they are sacred and sublime. I've not renounced them, although my reasons may not accord with them, because they are the hells of heaven. I've under this powerful argument, silenced Mr. Chillingworth, who is one of those characters in society who held most dreadful opinions, and who would destroy religious beliefs and all the different sects in the world. They could endeavour to induce instead some horrible system of human reason and profound psychology, philosophy. But soon upon the religious man silences his opponent. Let it not be supposed that because his opponent says no more upon the subject, he does so because he's disgusted with the stupidity of the other. No. Because he's completely beaten and nothing more to say. The distance now between the church and the hall was nearly traversed. Mr. Chillingworth, who is a good man, is not standing for this belief. Certain things, of course, paved the way for him to tell. Took as a kind leave, Mr. Barksdale, the brothers promised to call the following morning to see Flora. Henry and George then, in earnest conversation, Barksdale proceeded homewards. It's evident that scene in the vault made a deep and sad impression upon them, one which is not easily to be eradicated.